Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. We are so excited that you have joined us today. My name is Andrew, and it's my honor to host this podcast with Dr. Tim Elmore. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm well.
Good.
I'm excited
too. Yeah, we're really excited because we have an incredible conversation for you guys today with Dr. Ken Blanchard. Dr. Blanchard is a New York Times bestselling author. He's also a management expert, but you probably know him if you have read the book, The 1 Minute Manager, which is sold over 13 million copies. So we're talking with an incredible leadership and management expert today. Tim, I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Me too. I am too. Ken, thank you for joining us today.
Well, Tim, it's a joy to be with you guys.
I just want to lob some questions your way that I think listeners would be curious about. You have been on a great journey, a leadership journey for many decades now.
So, yes.
And you've been equipping leaders in corporate America for decades. So if you don't mind, I'd like to walk down memory lane. Talk about how you got started and that amazing book, The 1 Minute Manager, that just spread like wildfire.
Well, it's interesting. I was a college professor, and I wrote a textbook called Management of Organizational Behavior with Paul Hersey and taught for 10 years. And then I had a one-year sabbatical leave. I got my full professor in tenure, which everybody says is the ultimate. And we went to California for 1 year, and that was 38 years ago. My wife said, you know, summer in Massachusetts is 2 weeks of bad skating, and why don't we stay here? And so we ended up starting our own company. And shortly after we got underway, we met Spencer Johnson at a cocktail party. And Margie met him first. And he wrote children's books. And he wrote the values tales series, you know, the value of courage, the story of Jackie Robinson, the value of determination, the story of Helen Keller, the value of a sense of humor, the story of Will Rogers. And Margie met him first and hand carried him over and said, you two ought to write a children's book for managers. They won't read anything else. And Spencer was working on a 1 minute scolding with a psychiatrist, and I invited him to a seminar I was doing and the next week, and he came and sat there. And at the end, he came running up laughing. He said, forget parenting. Let's do the 1 minute manager. And it really kind of wrote us because he was a storyteller and a children's book writer, and I'm a storyteller. And so we decided to write a little parable. And we met in the first week in November and had it finished by the time we were going to the Rose Bowl at the end of December. And self-published it ourselves, sold 25,000 copies with no advertising. And then we went to New York, and that was just the beginning. And Spencer went off and, you know, wrote Who Moved My Cheese and other ones. And I started writing, you know, leadership books, but doing it in terms of parables and all that kind of thing. And so it was just really kind of fun because a lot of my professors told me I couldn't write. If I really wanted to be at a university, I should be an administrator. And so suddenly I'm writing parables and stories all the time, and it's just been an exciting journey.
Well, Ken, it has. And even if it wasn't for you, it has been for us. I mean, millions of us have benefited from not just 1 Minute Manager, but so much that you've written on situational leadership. And I'm so looking forward to June when we get to be together at the National Leadership Forum, because I'm just looking forward to soaking in just what spills out of you. I know this is probably embarrassing for you, but just the insights that you've garnered over the years, it's just phenomenal. So let me shift gears real quick. I'd love for you to think about what you're up to now. What are some of your findings today as you continue to equip leaders in so many arenas in your company? Are there any tidbits that pop up and you go, that seems to be a pattern or a trend today?
Well, Tim, one of the things we're finding now is that leadership is, at least for the young people, much more of a side-by-side relationship than top-down.
Yeah.
In fact, we even rewrote the 1 Minute Manager for the first time in over 30 years. It's called The New 1 Minute Manager. And one of the big changes we made was to create that side-by-side relationship. And we even changed the 1 Minute Reprimand to 1 Minute Redirects, because that's much more with a collaborative kind of thing. And so it doesn't mean that the young people want your job, but they also want to make sure that you look at them as a partner. And you're their partner, too, because you want them to win. You got to set goals so there's some accountability. but you have to convince them that you're just as accountability for their goal accomplishment as they are. And so I just believe that our main job as managers and leaders when working with our people is how do we get them an A average, you know? How do we help them accomplish their goals?
Absolutely. And that's a noble thing. That's not a bad thing. It's not like we're diluting it. We're saying let's call out the very best in them. That's good.
That's right. And when they win, you win, mm-hmm. and your organization wins. It's a triple a win.
Absolutely. So let's look at the other side of this coin, if you don't mind, for just a moment. What would be some of your greatest concerns today for leaders, not just young leaders, but leaders in general in our high-speed, high-volume 21st century world? Were there any that you would say, I'm a little concerned about that. I don't know if we're realizing the drift or if we're realizing the direction we're going right now.
Well, I think the biggest concern is the speed of change. And we dealt with that in our company a number of years ago. I wrote a book with a fellow from Europe, Terry Waghorn, called Mission Possible, How to Create a World-Class Organization While There's Still Time. And we argued that you got to manage the present and create the future at the same time, but you don't want to send people with present time responsibilities away to plan your future because they'll kill it because they're either overwhelmed with the present or a vested interest. And so my wife Margie was the president of our company, and she said she promoted herself out. She now heads up the Office of the Future, and she's got several people that work with her, and their full-time job is to go out there and find out what's new and what might really impact our industry. And also when 9/11 happened, a lot of our competition had major problems. Even a few of them went out of business because they were just used to face-to-face training and didn't know anything about the internet and all that kind of thing. And so, for example, we just our daughter-in-law who works with us, she just got a master's degree in neuro leadership. And so we're really looking at where does that fit in with everything? And so you constantly have to learn. And what we got to do is create with our clients that whole thing. I just wrote a book, which was fun. I thought it was going to be just for older people, but everybody's jumping onto it. Refire, don't retire, you know, and a lot of people retire even in their 30s. They start doing the same thing. But you got to constantly challenge yourself intellectually, emotionally, physically, spiritually, so you're continuing to grow. If you aren't growing, I remember when I wrote a book with Norman Vincent Peale, he said, lie down, you know, let them throw the dirt on you because you're already dead.
Just physically do what's already happened on the inside. That's crazy. Well, I'm hearing what you're saying, and Ken, I'll tell you what's racing through my mind. I think it was you all in your company that were the first people I ever heard, this was years ago, do what you just took a minute to describe, where there was this, there are people doing the current work, but then there's this community of people that are looking ahead, and they're scheming up ideas and so forth. That's not the right word, but could you drill down a little bit more on this? It's a special entrepreneurial zone, isn't it, that are looking ahead and looking outside of the current widgets that you're making.
It's really interesting when my wife or any of the folks that work with her go to our big national convention, you know, they've changed the name, so I can't remember it, but I think it's Associating and Training Development or something like that, but they walk the floor, you know, but they go to the small booths, not the large ones, because that's where the new ideas are and all. They're trying to constantly find out what's happening out there, because if you put yourself, you know, your head in the mud, you're going to be like Kodak, you know, or Xerox,
and
all of a sudden, you know, here's a great company that are out of business.
Yeah. So true. Ken, you have a special heart for education. I mean, that's where your career began, and for the next generation. Would you talk about that for a moment? Because really, when we, you know, our work is completely given to the emerging generation of adults who are moving from backpack to briefcase. Would you just talk about your heart for the next generation for a minute?
Yes, I think that's just so important with the young people. Like in San Diego, we're really taking that on. You know, when our graduation rate from high school is below 50%, you
goodness.
Know. And so what we're really doing is kind of working on that. For example, we have 20 women in our company who have little sisters from Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and they're really helping these kids have a whole different perception about life. And with our Blanchard institute, you know, that we've started in our foundation, our family said that's where we want to put our focus. Mm. And so we have a whole student self-leadership program to help students realize that they got to lead themselves. They can't, you know, operate on assumed constraints that other people put in their heads. And they got to realize that just because they aren't in a position of, quote, power, they still have power if they got skills and interpersonal abilities and all that kind of thing. And then we teach them how to, you know, collaborate for success with people. How do they ask for the help that they need? We convince them that if you ask somebody to help you and they do, you've won. If they say no, you've broken even, you know, because you didn't have it before. And that, remember what Eleanor Roosevelt said, nobody can make you feel inferior without your permission, you know. And so we just love the young people, and I think that's where we got to really put a major emphasis. That's why I'm excited about working with you all.
Absolutely. Well, Ken, I keep using this word, we're honored. It's cliche, but it's true. We're honored to think about future partnerships and collaboration, because that's where we live, and we need voices like yours that are timely and timeless for this next generation, not just the established leaders of today. So let's kind of, if you don't mind, I want to spend the remaining minutes we have really talking about what you're going to be presenting at our National Leadership Forum in 2016 in June. You know, our theme is leading at every level, creating a culture of leadership on your campus. I'd love for you to just to tease the listeners right now by talking about some of the important thoughts you've had over the years and what you'll be presenting that day in June.
Well, Tim, one of the thoughts that we've had is that being an effective leader, you know, and be able to create a great culture is a journey, and it starts with yourself. And we really think that self-knowledge is really important. Most of the leaders I know who are problems and egomaniacs are really scared little kids inside because they don't know themselves. And so we really want to start there. And once you know who you are and feel comfortable with who you are, then the next concern is one-on-one leadership when you're trying to build a trusting relationship, you know, and how do you do that? That's really key. And then if you're pretty good at one-on-one, then we might be able to become a team leader. And teams are more complicated than one-on-one relationships because, you know, you got several people involved and people are watching you and all. But now you're trying to build a sense of community. And then finally, the last one is organizational leadership, where your major focus is culture. And how do you create a culture of both high results and high human satisfaction? Mm. And I think that's really what I'd love to just take them on that journey, but then focus on how do you create a great culture, particularly, I think, through servant leadership. And a lot of times when I talk about servant leadership, they think I'm talking about the inmates running the prison or trying to please everybody. But they don't understand, you know, there's two parts of servant leadership. There's vision and direction and goals, which is the leadership part of servant leadership. And the traditional hierarchy is responsible to make sure that those are really clear. It doesn't mean you don't involve people, because you really do. And then once people are clear on direction and where they're going and the values and all, then you turn that pyramid upside down, and now you're into the servant part of servant leadership. And your job now is to help people win. How do you get them an A?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love for you to take one more minute and drill down on that idea. When you have seen leaders do this, they've got the leadership part, the direction, the goals, the vision, and then they got this turn the triangle upside down, and now you're serving, helping people win. It works. What would you say are some of the, if you don't mind, some of the specifics that you've seen executive-level leaders, C-level leaders, practice that do transform a culture? I'm sure you've seen some of this over the years.
Well, you know, one of my favorites is I wrote a book with Colleen Barrett, who took over as president of Southwest Airlines when Herb decided to step down, you know, and it was just really amazing, because there's no accident why they kill the competition there. The only airlines made consistent profit in the last 40 to 45 years. And because they believe in this whole concept, and when they get to turning that pyramid upside down, they really let their people bring their brains to work. You know, they can solve problems, you know. So often, you know, if you have a problem dealing with an airline and you go to somebody and you're talking to a duck, they're going, quack, 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 quack. It's our policy, quack, quack, I work here. Do you want to talk to my supervisor or what, that kind of thing? it's just terrific the way that they they do that and just make decisions that frontline people. I when I travel, I have a geezer pouch that I put my license in and my passport, and my tickets, and my itinerary. And one day I loaded that beauty up and I left it on my desk at home, and I'm pulling into the San Diego airport a couple of years after 9/11. I hadn't even met Herb and Colleen yet, and I didn't have any identification. And so I had to get on a plane. The only book I've ever written that I got my picture on the cover is one I wrote with Don Shula, the old Miami Dolphins coach. Mm-hmm. They took our picture of Miami Stadium. So I ran into the bookstore at the airport and they happened to have a copy. And so I bought it. And the first airline I went to, just to show you what I'm talking about, was Southwest Airlines. And the guy checking my bag says, "Could I see your identification?" And I said, "Gee, I'm sorry, I don't have a license or a passport. How would this do?" And I held the book up, and he shouts out, "This man knows Don Shula. Put him in first class." You know, they don't even have first class. You know, and they didn't even have business select then. And they're high fiving me out in the street. You know, and finally, an older guy there says, "I know the security guards upstairs. I'm sure I can get you through." And he walked me through. And when I met Colleen and Herb, I told them that story. And they said, "You know, that guy didn't assume you had superimposed your picture on that book."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, besides, the bigger question is whether you got, weapons or not. You know? And so we would back that decision with our job.
Yeah.
And so it's really amazing. But see, that's the kind of thing that really is powerful. And we'll talk about that.
Absolutely. Ken, we're so looking forward to it, as I mentioned. And thank you for taking some time to talk to us today. This is rich and just whets our appetite for the National Leadership Forum in 2016. Andrew, I'll turn this back over to you, Andrew, to wrap
us
up.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you, Dr. Blanchard. What an incredible conversation. If you are somebody listening right now, maybe you've read one of Dr. Blanchard's books. Maybe you haven't. Maybe this is your first interaction with him. You can tell right now he is a well of knowledge that you definitely want to spend some time learning from. And we have an incredible opportunity. Not only is he going to be speaking at the National Leadership Forum, but for people who register a group of 7 or more people, you'll actually have the opportunity to attend a special luncheon that will be way more intimate, way more time for you to kind of spend some personal time with Dr. Blanchard. That's an incredible opportunity that we want to offer to you. So the National Leadership Forum is coming up June 23rd and 24th. Dr. Blanchard will be there, of course, but also along with him, we have Gene Smith, who's the athletic director at Ohio State University, Maria Karstarfen, who is the superintendent of Atlanta Public Schools, and many, many, many more people. These are conversations. This is a forum where you're going to be sitting at round tables. You're going to be able to interact with these speakers. This is an incredible opportunity for you to have conversations with some of the best leaders that are out there right now. Along with Dr. Blanchard. So thank you again, Tim. Thank you, Dr. Blanchard. We hope you'll continue to be a part of these leadership conversations where you are, but also come and attend with us at the National Leadership Forum this June. Thanks.